It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It's a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It's a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. The worship associate for this morning is Colleen McKenzie, and when we talked about the theme for this morning, which is finding and using your own voice, it was a theme that she had suggested and had some passion for, and it helped shape the sermon that I delivered. So Colleen is really the co-creator of this morning's service.
We participate in an unending chain of conversations. But despite all this practice talking, I think most of us have trouble finding our true voice, let alone using it. We chatter, but are we really reflected in our words? Often not. Sometimes for necessary reasons, like portraying a particular image for an employer at a conference, or not telling the bride how much you dislike her gown on her wedding day. But holding back or changing our comments to suit the expectations of another can be taken too far. Like too many of us, I have had times in my life when I've allowed my true voice to erode to nearly nothing, completely following another's lead and all the while continuing to talk like there was nothing wrong. It's a costly trap, for as the voice fades, so does the spirit. But I can assure you, from experience, it's possible to get your voice back. What about those of us who haven't found our voices yet, or those who have been categorically dismissed as not having much of value to say? I loved working with one of these groups, high school students, particularly those in alternative education. After some classroom teaching experience, in one of my teacher's college assignments, I asserted that we should give high school English students an opportunity to write down their personal thoughts and feelings and allow them to either keep the notes or use a shredder at the end of class. The intent was to give them a private and safe space to explore their minds, to vent, to ponder, to hope or pray, and through the writing process, to start to find their own unique voices. The idea was received well by the professor, but that was pre-Columbine, pre-9/11, and today it's a different world. I doubt there'd be much support for such a suggestion, and I'm not sure I'd chance voicing it. In the current climate of fear, I think we've really lost something. Without a sense of safety, voices become quieter. When I first thought of the shredder, I identified more with students and less with adults in the trenches of career and family. But time has a way of shifting perspective. Indeed, it now seems to me that age can bring more restrictions on voice rather than fewer. Before we speak, we consider partners' feelings, company cultures, and the little ears of children. Perhaps we're the ones that need some paper and a shredder. Maybe instead of feeding that machine our bank statements, using it to protect our identity, we can use it to help us find one. Writing to purge the mind and heart can be seen as healthy for the spirit as well. For the Dalai Lama ritually writes down his concerns on a sheet of paper each evening and throws it into a fire. Hey, if it's good enough for him, maybe we should try it. A great way not only to begin to find your voice, but also practice using it can be found right here at the church. I've had the opportunity to be both a participant and a leader of Evensong, and I've benefited greatly. I tend to be more reserved when it comes to discussing personal matters. That might seem odd since I'm a writer and am also up here speaking right now, but when I'm writing fiction, I get to don a mask and have great fun. And when I'm up here, I fulfill a clearly defined role and follow my script. When on my own, though, in the everyday world, I often become quite shy. In the welcoming atmosphere of Evensong, however, my reservations soon faded away. The series of 8 weekly gatherings, is a wonderful place to learn not only how to speak, but how to listen. After having a week to ponder a topic, you are given the chance to set your true voice free and talk without interruptions, without questions, and in an accepting atmosphere. Each person has a chance to speak while the rest of the group silently and supportively listens. And true listening to another person is valuable. Not only is the speaker's voice strengthened by the acceptance and validation, while listening, we learn that we're not alone. The preceding has been a paid promotional message for Evensong and related... No, I'm just kidding. I'm just a big fan. But seriously, you should consider joining Evensong. A new group begins on March 23rd, and you can sign up in the gallery after the service. Of course, expressing our voice is not limited to speaking or writing. People caring for those who need help are saying so much. And expression through music is wonderful, as we hear each Sunday. Some people also show their regard for others by cooking a beautiful meal. Related to that, to the friends I met in Evensong in the fall, at our holiday potluck, I swear that my store-bought frozen lasagna wasn't trying to say anything. In whatever form of communication we choose, each one of us has the potential to speak with our own unique and valuable voice. Let's take the time to find it and speak up.
Now in the center of our service, the center of our lives, we make time to honor life's quieter sides. You may use these moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. Please join me in an attitude of prayer. Let us listen for voices that bless us and call us toward a higher kind of humanity. There are so many voices we do not want to listen to, voices that belittle and demean us. May we let those bitter voices go by like echoes of bad ideas. Voices that say we can never be enough, or that we are damned, or too sinful ever to be acceptable. These are usually the voices of tormented people. Let us move out of their way as we move toward the light. The light has voices, but they bless us and call us into our fullest humanity. They help us become human religiously rather than fearfully. The voices coming from the light bless us because they know we are children of God, children of the universe, the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself, and that we are precious. Let us know that we are precious, that we are precious people called to share our gifts of life with a world that desperately needs to hear life-blessing, life-giving voices. Let us hear those voices, and let us be those voices of life and love, of challenge and encouragement. If we must hear voices, and we must, let us listen for the good ones, and let us strive to become some of the voices of blessing, affirmation, challenge, and empowerment, so that we too, as we pass through life, may bless the world with our own voice, our own gifts, our own life, and our own love. Amen. I have a sort of confession to make, and that's that I hear voices. Don't worry for me. The voices I hear are mostly a comfort, and in striving to be in their company, gives my life both meaning and purpose. Colleen spoke of finding your individual voice, and when we talked about this service, I told her that I was going to use the old Greek myth of Echo and Narcissus to frame it. If you haven't been coming here for long, you might think that a myth is just an untrue story. That's not right. A myth is something that never happened, but always is. Good myths have insights into the human condition that seem relevant even 2, 3, or 4,000 years after they were first told. So the truths contained in myths aren't like those in science. For one thing, they're deeper, they last a lot longer, and they're always symbolic and metaphorical, never literal. Echo and Narcissus. It's a wonderful story. Little Echo was a nymph who was very pretty but couldn't shut up. And once, after talking to Zeus's wife Hera to distract her while Zeus escaped from yet another of his local affairs, Hera got so angry she put a curse on little Echo and said that from then on she could never have a voice of her own but could only repeat back what others said to her. That's the source of our word echo. Now, Narcissus was a beautiful young man. Women kept falling in love with him. He was completely unkind and indifferent and never returned an ounce of the love he received. So one of the avenging goddesses, it must have been Artemis, put a curse on him too and said that it would be his curse to also feel a deep love for someone who could never return his love. So Narcissus and Echo are going to make a very interesting pair. Echo sees him lying by a stream where he's seen his face reflected in the water. He's adoring it. But Echo can't call out to him. Narcissus, in the meantime, has fallen completely in love with his own reflection. And he cries out, "I love you! Love you!" says Echo. But Narcissus loved no one but himself. And he gazed, narcissistically, at his own reflection until he finally wasted completely away. And little Echo also wasted away with neither a love nor a voice of her own, until nothing was left of her but that voice repeating back whatever the last thing was that was said to her. What a story. There's a lot of psychological insight in that story that belies the fact that it's probably been told for 4,000 years. Narcissists, who, no matter how attractive they may be to others, and they often are capable of loving only themselves and their partners, who are only permitted to echo back whatever Narcissus says until they too waste away. We can really lose ourselves if we never find our voice. And we've all experienced this at least once. Not having a voice, playing the role of echo to someone who really didn't care. What an awful experience. It's just soul-draining and life-denying. Now, the role of echo is one with which a lot of women identify, but it isn't always or only the woman who's the echo. Family counselors tell me they've seen it both ways, including couples where the woman is the narcissist and the man is assigned the role of echoing back whatever she likes to hear. But however the roles are cast, it's a plot in which nobody can win. Echo and Narcissus each had half the answer, and half the answer isn't enough. Echo could only love others from a distance. But she couldn't love herself, and she wasted away without ever having a voice of her own. Narcissus could certainly love himself. He saw more fine qualities in himself than anyone in the world did. But that's all he noticed. And he wasted away too, because that's not enough. Now today we probably wouldn't call her Echo. We'd update it with modern language. Today maybe we'd say she was just singing karaoke. Singing words to somebody else's tune. But spiritual karaoke is not satisfying. And you know that if you've tried it, and I'll bet you've tried it. And when we see someone doing it, we always want to say, oh, for God's sakes, just be yourself, will you? I mean, we've said this. We think this. Well, that's not that easy either. Not for women and not for men. There can be something scary about putting your own voice out there, about speaking in your own voice, about being vulnerable and being known. Last year when I was talking with Hannah Wells, our intern, about preaching, we talked about the fear, some of the fears in preaching, and I said, here's what I think the real fear is. The real fear is that if you actually do show people who you are, afterward they're going to say, well, that wasn't much. And her eyes got big. It's scary to put ourselves out there. Don't just look at it as a heroic thing where everyone who hears the story will rush out and find their voice. It's not likely. Now, this reminds me of a television comedy skit that maybe no one else in the room ever even saw. I think it was 20 years ago. It was about 10 minutes long, and it had Rich Little, the great impersonator, in it. And Rich Little played the husband, and his wife was frustrated with him because this is kind of like the Echo Narcissus story in reverse, because he would never be himself. He would play Bogey for her. And after doing Humphrey Bogart for a while, then he'd be John Wayne or Sean Connery or someone else, always very convincingly. And his wife got more and more frustrated and more angry, and she finally said, look, if you can't be your real self, I'm leaving. And then suddenly, this little wimpy, weak, whiny, sniveling voice came out of him. And she looked at him and she said, is that the real you?
Yes.
She said, do Bogey again. So part of finding our own voice lies in believing that we actually have a voice that's worth finding and that anybody wants to hear it. One of the problems is that we all have more than one voice. And sometimes we have to choose which voice to use. I love this part of it. The Greeks really understood this and made it so much easier for us to understand that we have a lot of voices. They had all these gods and goddesses, and they knew that each of them were voices that came up within people's lives and that we had to make some sort of a deal with them. A few years ago, I read a book by Arianna Huffington called The Gods of Greece. She's Greek. And was surprised to learn that even all these centuries after the Greek gods officially died, she also grew up thinking of the voices inside her as competing goddesses. She said it gave them a dignity, and that her whole adult life has been trying to negotiate between the competing and conflicting demands of Demeter the mother to her two daughters and Artemis, the fiercely ambitious, driven woman. Maybe you think it's odd, talking like you have several voices. We don't talk like this very often. But I think everyone in this room has done it. Just to take one kind of example, you're on a first date or you're cruising at a bar or a party or a church. And you meet somebody you want to impress. A woman might decide whether she wants to come across as strong Artemis, as sexy Aphrodite, maybe as the mother Demeter type, or as Hera, the archetypal wife. Which is going to play best here? We think this way. In the meantime, the man is choosing between being sexy Dionysus or cool and competent Apollo, or tricky Hermes, or maybe Big Daddy Zeus. We have all these voices. Sometimes our voice needs to be a blend of the several things that are really most important to us, and what passes for integrity in humans comes through integrating our different voices into complementary expressions of our core, our soul, our compassion. So finding our voice is less like a discovery and more like an achievement. It's so important for us to do this work, for us to find our voice and offer it to the world, because we're the only ones who can do it. And what a shame it would be if the world never got to hear your voice, because you forgot about it while you were singing spiritual karaoke to somebody else's tune. What a loss that would be. Finding and using our best voice is how we're born into our adult roles. All right, now there are ways in which all that's fairly simple and clear-cut. So let's take it up a level. Once we find our voice, it usually becomes clear to us that what really matters isn't just our voice. Actually, Narcissus doesn't get to write the story. The world's main interest really isn't in us. That's a shock to all of us, but it's true. If it's a whiny, sniveling voice, nobody will want to hear it. They'd rather hear us do Bogey. At least Bogey had some core and some strength and something to him. And if we can only focus on ourselves, nobody's going to want to hear that either for very long. One point of religion is to help us find voices worth serving with our own voice, to help us find ideals worth following with our lives, to help us find roles worth playing. That's what I meant when I said that I hear voices. They're a comfort to me. And striving to be in their company has given meaning and purpose to my life. Now, you know some of this. In fact, you make judgments on this every week here. You really don't come here to hear me. And if you're visiting from another church, you really don't go there to hear the preacher there. Think about this with me. You come because you hope we'll be a voice for something beyond us. You hope we'll be a voice for a perspective big enough to give you something to take home, something that can feed you in your own life. If you think back on it, I'm betting you've judged every preacher you've ever heard on what they served with their voice. What kind of a voice was it? Did their words just to draw attention to themselves, or were they serving a perspective and a spirit big enough to bring you in and feed you? Christians say, and I love this saying, that it isn't so much who we are that counts, but whose we are. Now that's what they mean. What are we serving? What gods are we incarnating? What spirits? Are they spirits that bless our world, or are they spirits that bore our world, or that even curse it? Abraham Lincoln once said that we seek the better angels of our nature. That word angel means messenger, a messenger from the gods. And any Greek would have understood what Lincoln was saying. Lincoln knew, like the Greeks, that we have many angels in our natures, both good and bad, and that they all come calling on us from time to time. And you know this too. But he thought that we should be listening only for the better angels of our nature. They need to be the tune that we sing with our voice in our own style. If we're to have a voice that blesses us and blesses the world, and a voice that the world needs to hear. You see how deeply religion, if it's done well, ties in with all of this. It's what it's about. Religion is the art of trying to become most fully human. That's what it's about. So spiritual karaoke is using your voice to sing someone else's tune, like Little Echo. And religion is using your voice to sing God's song, to put it poetically. It's the voice of God we're seeking. If you'd like that put into other words, it's the voice of wisdom, insight, compassion, love, connection. Those are some of the things that the symbol God is alluding to. That's the tune we want to sing, the tune that gives our voices the power to give life to us and blessings to others. Now, where do you find it? Where do you find that voice? The voice that can give grounding to your own voice, the good gods, the better angels of our nature. Where do you find it? You get that voice from politicians, from beer ads. Think of these. They're all offering you voices. Beer ads are absolutely offering you a voice and roles to play. You get it from movies sometimes, soap operas. Do you listen for the strongest, loudest, and scariest voice? Where do you find the voice that's most likely to be coming from the better angels of your nature? This is like asking, where do you find the voice of God, isn't it? So where do you find this voice of God? You find it in the shouting, Bible-thumping preachers, or the self-righteous politicians, or the arrogant friends who've made God so small they've got him in their pocket and can tell you the boundaries to legitimate beliefs? I don't think so. I don't think you ever find the voice you need in the loud and arrogant places. Listen to this. Many of you have heard this many times before. Some of you may not remember it, and some of you may be hearing it for the first time. Listen to this wonderful poetic passage from the Hebrew Scriptures, what Christians like to call the Old Testament. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. That's the kind of voice our better angels have, I think. I had an experience like this that always comes to mind when I think of that passage. I love that passage. You might find this useful too. I've never much liked public spectacles, and I've avoided almost every graduation ceremony in my life. I did attend my high school graduation because I graduated from a military academy and we didn't have a choice. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been there. I did not attend my undergraduate education or the ceremony for the master's degree. And I had no intention of going to the one for the PhD degree either. I don't like those things. And then a classmate told me that I had to go to the ceremony for the PhD. I said, why? He said he wouldn't tell me, but that there was a line there that would be said by the president of the university, and I needed to hear it, and I would never forget it. Okay, now that's seductive. So for the first time, I rented a gown and a hood, and I bought the hat, and I took part in this graduation ceremony. And I was sitting right next to my classmate, and I kept wondering when and what this great line was. It came near the end. After all the undergraduates and master's degrees had been granted, the president of our university, Hannah Gray, called us up onto stage, all of us who were receiving our PhD degrees from whatever fields. And after some brief introductory remarks, she turned to face us and she said, and this still chokes me up, she said, "I welcome you into the ancient and honorable community of scholars." I never heard such empowering and intimidating words in my life. We weren't just students who finally got through the place. No, now we were forevermore members of an ancient and honorable community of scholars. God, there must be thousands of them, millions of them, and they're watching us. I hadn't even realized such a community existed. I've spoken with others who got their doctorates at the same university, and the line has kept its power for all of us. It was a magical line. One woman told me that sometimes when she's preparing a lecture, she wants to cut corners because the class is only for freshmen and she's out of time. Then she'll hear voices. At least that one voice, reminding her of the ancient and honorable community of which she is a part, whether she likes it or not. And she says it feels like Aristotle is there looking at her, saying, "You don't really intend to cut corners on this lecture, do you?" Like me, she hears voices, and those voices are a comfort to her. And striving to be in their community gives her life, as it gives mine, much of its meaning and purpose. You realize this is the same message that religions give in their different ways. It is like saying, you are a child of God. You are a child of the universe. You are a son and daughter of life's longing for yourself, and you are precious. It's the same kind of statement. It grants us honor and a task. So when you serve a transcendent ideal, can you really say it's your voice you found? Yes, it's just a voice that you cared enough about to nourish and educate, to let it rub up against others who aspired to high ideals. And people around us can tell. They may not know just what inspired us, but they know we're trying to be true to something important, and it matters. It makes a difference. Because we've heard the voices of the better angels of our nature, and they always bless us by initiating us into that ancient and honorable community of people trying to come into their full humanity. And that's what we're about. There's no higher or more ennobling aspiration, I think. I don't mean just for individuals. It also works for whole groups of people. This is what happened with black people in the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. They found their voice and claimed their place at the table of humanity. It's what happened in the women's movements of the 60s and 70s and the gay rights movement that began when gays fought back against police harassment at the Stonewall Bar in 1969. These moments were among the miracles of the past half century. They're miracles because new life was born as new groups of people found their voices and connected their voices with timeless sorts of tunes like freedom, justice, equality. And they raised their voices to bless both themselves and the world around them, even if the world around them wasn't ready for the blessing. Those people heard voices. Not the voices of the loud bigots around them, not the loud voices of abusive policemen, not the voices of everyone telling them to get back in their place and be little echoes again, not those voices. They heard the still small voice that contained the voice of God, the voice of the better angels of their and our nature. This is a sermon that can't really end because it's a sermon about beginning to take ourselves seriously, trying to become fully human religiously. So here's how I want to begin. I want to begin by welcoming you, all of you, into the ancient and honorable community of people seeking their full humanity. You're all part of it. And I hope when you leave here, you hear voices. Voices that know your name, that know your soul. Voices that give you the power to speak, the power to bless yourselves and to bless your world, our world. Perhaps nothing in all of life is more sacred than hearing those voices and learning how to become one of them.